rabbi sold I to the merchant ships.
Welcome to Radio Free Canada. I'm your host, Kevin Annett. We know that things are gradually, and I say gradually, building, and more people are involved, but a lot of people seem to be holding back and waiting for some big momentous event or some other leadership to lead them. But let's remember Bob Marley's words just now, only ourselves can emancipate ourselves. So this is, again, an invitation for everyone to take the information away and act on it. Kanatarepublic.ca is our website. If you want to contact us for ideas for the show or be involved in any way with a movement, write to Republic of Kanata, K-A-N-A-T-A, republicofkanata@gmail.com. And today we're going to do a couple of things. We're going to do a recap, how we got here, the history that led to the movement. And in the second half of the show, Ryan and I are going to talk about the international situation, especially themes like Agenda 21. We're not just talking about genocide in Canada against Indigenous people. We're talking about it now aimed at the whole global population. We're going to look at ways that's happening. And so let me invite Ryan in. Ryan, how are you?
Hey, Kevin. I'm doing very good. How are you?
I've been doing well. You know, it's nice to have a few weeks off, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. Radio can be somewhat tiring. Even doing it once a week can kind of get to you, especially doing all the additional research on this side. It can kind of wear you down. You need to take a break once in a while.
Well, exactly. And, you know, there's a sense, too, and having done public radio in Vancouver for 10 years, just the emotional pressure on us every week to turn out something that's relevant, that's involving people and is saying something new is just a real struggle. So, you know, but we carry on.
Yeah, you carry on. And at the same time, you think that you might need to produce new information every week. Once in a while, people need a little bit of a recap, which is why I think today's a good time to go ahead and do that after our 2-week hiatus. Yes. Of course, I'm still doing my show on the side, but at the same time, I've learned a lot of new things in the last couple of weeks, and I think today would be a good place to start with a little history on where we came from and maybe a little bit of a fortune-telling into what's happening in the future, probably.
Right. Now, I want you to mention your show. Be sure to announce a bit later about all the information for people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Secret teachings. You know, just starting that whole thing of the recap, it was really prompted by something, of course, that we've been talking about since June, when Canada not only officially admitted genocide, but the deaths of thousands of children. Now, this has been nagging me, of course, for 20 years since I first learned about it, but I hope it's nagging a lot of people out there, because under international law, when a country admits genocide and it's been proven, there's a responsibility that follows on every nation and every citizen in the world. It's called the International Convention on the Prevention of Genocides, ratified in, well, it was passed in 1948 at the UN, ratified by Canada in 1952, so Canada's a signatory. Article 1, it says, the crime of genocide must be punished and proven. The proven part is done. It's the punishment part. That's the question I want to focus on, because when genocide is there and people are admitted, I mean, even the Supreme Court of the chief of the Supreme Court in Canada, Beverly McLaughlin, you know, admitted that genocide occurred. Those were her exact words. What follows is that therefore the system that did it has to be punished, and under international law that means prosecuted. There have to be consequences. And it's interesting, there's four definitions. I dug into this more. And when they talk about the prevention and punishment of genocide, they have four things, how you go about that. They call them intervention, sanctions, support to victims, and prosecution. So obviously none of this is going on in Canada. I mean, international law might as well not exist because, you know, they're getting away with this crime. But it's very important to show what every nation, even if you're not a signatory to the convention, you're obligated to do this in the world. Intervention. That means not just intervening at the UN, but if need be, sending in troops to protect victims of genocide. They've done that in Rwanda. They've done it in various other places. But if there's genocide going on, and it's clear there still is in Canada, we can get into that, countries have the right to send troops into Canada to protect the victims. They have the right to bring in sanctions against Canada economic, political sanctions, stopping trade with Canada, shutting down that whole thing, supporting the victims. It doesn't just mean handing them a bit of money like the Canadian government has done. It means supporting them in their right to bring the ones who did this to them to trial, and not just trial in stage-managed Canadian courts, but international courts of law. And finally, prosecution. Every country in the world has to help prosecute Canada for genocide. Now, if they don't do these things, they're colluding with crimes against humanity, and they, like Canada, have lost their legitimate right to govern. So, go ahead.
What do you think one of the reasons may be? I know this hasn't got a lot of attention. The TRC didn't get a lot of attention in the news. It was in the New York Times here in the States. But maybe one of the reasons that even people that are aware of it don't give too much credence to it is because in the official report, they claim that it was a form of negligence on the part of the different churches, and it wasn't actually a form of genocide, as in it wasn't intentional.
Well, you know, that whole thing of negligence, it's an unknown lie, because the courts in Canada already proved, even the Crown Courts, proved that it was not a matter of negligence. It was a matter of deliberate intent. And I know, because I was going back a bit into history, in 1995, right after I was fired from the United Church for getting this stuff out, the lawyer, a guy called Peter Grant, he was the lawyer for the first group of Indian survivors to sue the United Church and the federal government. It eventually resulted in the Brenner decision in the BC Supreme Court, and that decision said this was not just a matter of negligence. Children were deliberately harmed. So the very first case in Canada is refuting that, but of course, relying on the three-minute memory, they figure people have forgotten all that.
Right. Well, see, one of the things that makes a lot of sense to me overall is that if you look back into the 1930s, the British Columbia Sexual Sterilization Act. The Nazis also passed a sterilization act in Germany. And in the United States, there were sterilization programs. So three different countries that were operating the same types of programs at the same time. Maybe that kind of goes back to what you were saying a minute ago about why no other country intervenes in these cases, because other countries are running their own forms of genocide and covering up their history of it.
Bingo, that's exactly right. And, you know, we know politically why they don't do it, because they're all, and as a matter of fact, I had somebody say that to me once. When we were doing our first tribunal in Vancouver in the spring of 1998 in the summer, there was a UN observer there. It was group IRAM, International Human Rights Association of American Minorities. They came and then they actually helped set up the tribunal, although later they pretended they didn't. And they said to me, one of these guys, who was very active at the UN, said, nobody is going to open this can of worms at the United Nations. I said, really? Why is that? He said, because they all did it. Every major European power in the world did what Canada did. So nobody wants, you know, to do that. That's one of the reasons Canada gets away with this. But what you said about the sterilization laws, there's a very good book called War Against the Weak, America's Plan to Create a Master Race by Edwin Black. And that documents how the eugenics movement began in America after the Civil War in the psychiatric and medical community, where America was getting swamped by all these immigrants, and they wanted a way to control and breed out the so-called inferior elements. And that's really the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute in Berlin picked up on the Rockefeller-funded Eugenics Institute, also funded by the Harriman family, Avril Harriman, the Bush family, all of that. They were in on it early on. And the Nazi and American eugenic movement fed off each other before, after, and during the war.
Yeah, absolutely. George Bush, the father, was actually one of the heads of the Brown Brothers Harriman Bank, and they were tied in with the European Rothschild banking dynasties who fed the Nazi war machine and Stalin's war machine, as well as Mussolini in Italy. It's all very interconnected, and the same funders funded all of the different groups. And that's why it's funded, and you see the same types of programs unraveled in different states and in different countries, even though they, you know, politically oppose each other. They're running the same exact programs.
Right. Well, that's, you know, why this is not a dead issue. It's an international phenomena.
Well, it still goes on today, too. That's another reason that they won't bring about justice for actions of the past, because then it would bring to light the actions they're taking in the modern day. And we actually just saw that with the releasing of these videos by this Center for Medical Progress and a hacker group that went into Planned Parenthood over, I forget how many years, 3 or 4 years, and they did an extensive investigation finding out that Planned Parenthood was basically forcing women or manipulating them into having abortions where they would then take the baby parts and sell them. And that's just a small crack in the facade of an international scheme, scandal.
Now, we're going to get into that whole question of Planned Parenthood, Agenda 21, depopulation in the second half of the show. And I want to do background for that to show how, you know, from our experience in Canada, how this has grown into this much bigger awareness. Some of the background I also want to touch on is not only the cases that led to the recognition that genocide has occurred in Canada, but also the hard evidence that we're dealing with. Now, this stuff is lost very quickly. There's, you know, I know speaking to groups now, the younger generation, they have no idea of everything that we proved just even a few years ago. It's wiped out of the memory so quickly that we have to keep reiterating these things. But it was very clear from the beginning of our work back as early as 1998 when we did our first tribunal that there is voluminous evidence proving intent to commit genocide. It's everywhere in the system. It may not be now because a lot of it's been weeded out. You know, the government of Canada admitted that they had document destruction teams going around and wiping out a lot of the records in the residential schools. You know, but the point is that this stuff is all out there. If people want to go to itccs.org, 3.5 hours of all of these documents and everything is right there online. And the other, and I want to mention this because a lot of the Native people who brought this evidence out have died in the course of this work, some of them definitely through foul play. But, you know, one of the main tools we used in getting this evidence out was a thing called Hidden from History, which was Vancouver Co-op Radio program that I operated between 2001 and 2010, when it was shut down very quickly after we had brought out evidence of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police involvement in the disappeared Native women in Vancouver. There were two eyewitnesses who came on the air and said they had seen Mounties taking Native women out to Piggy's Palace, where the Pictons were killing off people. That same week, we were shut down. And, you know, so that ended things very quickly. But on that radio show, it was amazing. The station is situated right in the downtown east side of Vancouver, where thousands of Native people live and hundreds of the survivors of residential schools. So what I said to people is, every Monday at 1, come on into the studio. It's an open mic. If you have a story to tell about what happened to you in the residential school death camps, the mic is yours. And at first, it was kind of like when I opened the pulpit of my church. Nobody responded at first. But within a couple of years, we sometimes had 14 or 15 people crammed in the studio. They're all survivors. They're all saying things like, yeah, that happened to me. I dug graves for kids. And that's all archived. It's probably deleted now out of you know, Co-op Radio records. But that was all being broadcast every week in Vancouver, and it's definitely one of the things that started turning things around.
And you did that for about 10 years, right?
2001 to 2010. And it was right in the very period where we were beginning to occupy churches. I mean, it was great. We would have live broadcasts from these church occupations we were doing. We'd have people who occupied the church come on the radio the next Monday and talk about what had happened. It was fantastic.
So you've been talking about this for decades. And of course, if you've ever read your books or seen the documentaries, I mean, you've been bringing evidence to light for, what, probably 2 decades now, Kevin? Coming up on 2 decades?
Well, it's 2 decades since I was fired from the church. But even before then, I was letting Sir Robert speak from my pulpit, which is what sealed my fate. But no, it's been over 20 years. It's also kind of when people say, well, why do we need to break ties with the Crown? This is the hard evidence, because it's a criminally convicted body and it has no more authority over us. That's kind of what this all proves.
Right. Well, I mean, it's the cognitive dissonance that really kind of irks me, where I'm sure you've had hundreds and thousands of people over the years, hundreds that have supported you, but hundreds and thousands of people over the years who have basically called you crazy and told you that you're insane and that this is not true. And then when it finally comes out that there's actual evidence in the TRC where they admit to genocide in Canada, people at the same time they believe it didn't happen, then accept it and say, okay, it happened, but it wasn't as bad as Kevin was saying.
Oh, that's been the line all along. I mean, and it's really fascinating. If people are ever interested in what you'll face as a whistleblower, I'm going to write a whole book on this about exactly the stages they used with me At first, of course, they try to crush you. They take away your family. They tell all your friends you're crazy, and all of your support falls away. They make it so that you can't work. And then once you, if you hang in there like I did, they then start hitting the people around you so you don't have any support in the community. But when that didn't work, you see, they do what I remember in law school. They said, this classic case, my criminal law prof said, when you're on trial, if the evidence is on your side, you argue the evidence. But if the evidence is against your client, you attack the witnesses. And that's exactly what's going on. All they've done is attack me. They've never challenged the evidence. They've just attacked me. And that's the statement on their part that they're guilty.
Oh, exactly. That's the ad hominem fallacy. You just attack the person instead of their argument. That's what happens to me. That's what's happened to me in the last 5 or 6 years I've done radio. People just call in and say, no, you're wrong. And I say, okay, let's have a discussion. Why am I wrong about said subject? And they just say, well, because I, one guy actually called in and said, well, I have a PhD, so that means everything you say is wrong.
Oh my God, PhDs, don't get me started. It's kind of
That's a whole other book.
Every degree you get dumbed down 50% more. my theory. Even though I have 3 degrees, so maybe I'm indicting myself there, but.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. And I'm sure yes, you'll get an email about that this week. But anyway, going back into the history of it for a second, where all of this started from, and the radio show that you had prior to it being shut down, was, you know, as you kind of went through uncovering the evidence, I'm sure it just accumulated so fast. You wrote that book, Hidden from History, correct?
Yeah, it was actually started. As I was beginning the radio show in 2001, it was all of the evidence that came out of the IRAM tribunal in Vancouver. The judges were scared off or bought off. Nobody wanted to act on anything. So I just took the material and published it. I put it out there. And that Hidden from History book, the descendant of that is online, Hidden No Longer, Genocide in Canada, Past and Present. It's at hiddennolonger.com. Everything we're talking about, you know, is up there along with other stuff. But it went through all these phases because at that point, nobody would read it. Not one reporter, not one academic, nobody would even look in that direction.
But they'd condemn you without looking at the evidence.
Well, exactly. I remember this classic case that happened. We were at a protest outside the Anglican Church in downtown Vancouver, and the cops were there harassing people, and, you know, churchgoers were yelling at us, the usual thing. There was about 50 of us, mostly natives. And a woman, Harriet Nahani, was there, and as people probably know, she was the first one to go public with having witnessed the murder of a child. She came out to a protest we were at and in 1995, and her story hit the Vancouver Sun newspaper. This was before the lawsuit, so it was safe to report this stuff, right, for the media. And she saw this little girl, Maisie Shaw, kicked to her death down a flight of stairs at the United Church School, 1946. Well, a TV reporter came up to us, and she said, well, a lot of these claims about murders in residential schools, I mean, how do you prove any of this? I said to the reporter, go talk to that woman over there. She's an eyewitness. And the white woman, the reporter, looked at me. She looks at Harriet, and then with fear in her eyes, she turns around and walks in the other direction. You know, I mean, that sums it up, right?
Yeah, it's funny how, you know, people go to jail, people go to prison, businesses get shut down for a lot less, and you have all of this evidence, and it's just completely denied. I mean that just basically goes back again to the fact that it still goes on today, and that's the whole point in trying to expose it, not just for the past crimes, but for the present crimes and the crimes that will continue to take place. And you know, I think that's something that can lead us into the second part of today's show, and that of sustainability and the conference at the UN that's coming up with Jorge Bergoglio, the convicted criminal.
Right, and we're going to get into that right after the break. We got about 6 or 7 minutes to the break, and we're going to actually, at the break, play a really wonderful poem by Langston Hughes, the Black American poet, who said, "Let America be America again," is the name of the poem, but it really applies to everybody and every nation. And just before we get into that, though, I want to carry on from what you were saying, Ryan, and that is the continuity between these crimes. The genocide in the past is related to what's happening now and what will happen in the future. It's all one stream, and it's very deep in Western culture. It goes back millennia. It goes back, you know, the source of these things comes out of Rome, at least in the Western world it does, and the whole corporate notion that people do not have the right to be themselves. They have to live through a mediated reality. You know, I see this in all this hysteria over Pope Francis, even coming from atheists. People cannot know the truth themselves, there's got to be this father figure who gives it to us, and then it's legitimate. And maybe that's my problem. I'm not enough of a father figure or something.
But this is right. Well, see, that's a problem, is because when you bring the evidence out and you present it and you show it, you've shown it for however many years now, and I've done a lot in the same respect with other topics for myself, you don't really get the type of credibility, because there's still always people that say, well, we're waiting on an official type of disclosure from the government. We're waiting on some you know, like a father type figure to come out and announce it, like as if they want Bergoglio to specifically announce it to them for them to believe it. And then they say, well, we want somebody that's going to stand up and give us this information. But then I say, okay, well, we got Kevin over here doing that. Well, and they just kind of write it off and say, eh, he's not really official.
Well, and not only that, but there's been a multi-million dollar campaign against the work I do for since 1998. We know that for a fact. We know that from sources that came out later, including lawyers who work for the RCMP who admitted this stuff. That E division of the RCMP in Vancouver started a major campaign in the fall of 1998 to blacken my name, especially among progressives, among natives, of course, anyone who might support me. And that campaign started by Peter Montague. He was a head of black ops for the RCMP in British Columbia. That continues to the present day. So naturally, with millions of dollars at their disposal, what do you think most people are going to think? They're going to believe what they hear all the time, right? Which is bash Kevin, ignore the evidence, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You can't. I don't think you can even look up your name online without getting those official disinformation pages. I get emails every week from different people that tell me how much of a scammer you are and not to right. send you money when you ask for it. And
based on what evidence? Nothing.
Based on nothing. No, it's actually what they do is they use the ad hominem argument. I've emailed some of these people back and asked them, I say, okay, what evidence do you have? And they just say, I'm going to expose you. You're a shill.
Now you're the enemy, right?
Yeah, well, they have nothing to say.
It's funny, Ryan, because I used to work as a psych assistant on a psych ward in Vancouver for 3 years to pay my way through college. And it's amazing the way inmates act. They act exactly the same way that a lot of these shills do, in that you become the enemy. If you even disagree with somebody on the chronic ward, you are suddenly their chief enemy, right? And it's just phenomenal. I think it's a similar condition, frankly.
It is, you know, in fact, the U.S. Army actually has a program. Many other countries have the same types of programs where they have 10 specific social media accounts set aside for these people they hire. And it's like a psychological division where they go after people on social media. They go after people on the different other internet platforms to discredit them when they specifically make comments that are contrary to government policy, foreign right. policy, financial oh, yeah. policy. I mean that's where the word trolls even comes from. And that's right. that's a U.S. Army program, as well as psychological warfare programs they've been running and operating. The point is, though, basically that regardless of everything that's happened in the past, people always say, well, we want someone to stand up and be that leader. I mean, you've done that. And the fact that we're bringing about these common law courts, or not the common law courts, but the Republic through the common law courts yeah. and through the people's assemblies, maybe you can talk on that for a moment, because that's really what's making the change and trying to alter all of this corruption that we face, breaking away from the system and forming our own type of republic.
Well, I'm going to get into that. As a matter of fact, we've got about 2 minutes before the break, and I'm going to flag that for the next half of the show, because it's the next part I wanted to get into. You know, we've talked about the crimes and some of where it's come from and the disclosure of this. It's all been proven. Now the question is, for every person on the planet, what are you going to do? This is a collective responsibility. You cannot and are not obligated to pay for or be part of a system that murdered and continues to murder children. And we are providing a way out of that. And so we're going to get into that in detail in the next half of the show. And just ask our technical folks if they could now play Let America Be America Again, Langston Hughes.
Let America Be America Again by Langston Hughes. Let America be America again. Let it be the dream it used to be. Let it be the pioneer on the plain, seeking a home where he himself is free. America never was America to me. Let America be the dream the dreamers dreamed. Let it be that great strong land of love, where never kings connive nor tyrants scheme that any man be crushed by one above. It never was America to me. Oh, let my land be a land where liberty is crowned with no false patriotic wreath, but opportunity is real and life is free. Equality is in the air we breathe. There's never been equality for me, nor freedom in this homeland of the free. Say, who are you that mumbles in the dark? And who are you that draws your veil across the stars? I am the poor white, fooled and pushed apart. I am the Negro bearing slavery's scars. I am the red man driven from the land. I am the immigrant clutching the hope I seek and finding only the same old stupid plan of dog-eat-dog, of mighty-crush-the-weak. I am the young man full of strength and hope, tangled in that ancient endless chain of profit, power, gain, of grab the land, of grab the gold, of grab the ways of satisfying need, of work the men, of take the pay, of owning everything for one's own greed. I am the farmer, bondsman to the soil. I am the worker, sold to the machine. I am the Negro, servant to you all. I am the people, humble, hungry, mean, hungry yet today, despite the dream, beaten yet today. Oh, pioneers, I am the man who never got ahead, the poorest worker, bartered through the years. Yet I'm the one who dreamt our basic dream in the old world while still a serf of kings, who dreamt a dream so strong, so brave, so true that even yet its mighty daring sings in every brick and stone, in every furrow turned that's made America the land it has become. Oh, I'm the man who sailed those early seas in search of what I meant to be my home. For I'm the one who left dark Ireland's shore and Poland's plain and England's grassy lea, and torn from black Africa's strand I came to build a homeland of the free. The free? Who said the free? Not me. Surely not me. The millions on relief today, the millions shot down when we strike, the millions who have nothing for our pay, for all the dreams we've dreamed, and all the songs we've sung, and all the hopes we've held, and all the flags we've hung, the millions who have nothing for our pay, except the dream that's almost dead today. Oh, let America be America again, the land that never has been yet, and yet must be, the land where every man is free, the land that's mine, the poor man's, Indians, Negroes, me, who made America, whose sweat and blood, whose faith and pain, whose hand at the foundry, whose plow in the rain, must bring back our mighty dream again. Sure, call me any ugly name you choose, the steel of freedom does not stain. From those who live like leeches on the people's lives, we must take back our land again. America! Oh yes, I say it plain, America never was America to me. And yet I swear this oath, America will be. Out of the rack and ruin of our gangster death, the ripe and rot of graft and stealth and lies, we the people must redeem the land, the mines, the plants, the rivers, the mountains, and the endless plain, all a stretch of these great green states, and make America again.
Having tears come to my eyes, and it not only says it all about making our world again, but, you know, when they talked about all of the ones back in Europe who dreamt the dream, you know, I think of my ancestor Peter Annett rotting in prison in London in the 1760s. I think of my ancestor Daniel O'Neill, who lost his whole family emigrating from Ireland. He was an orphan when he landed in Montreal in 1880, a 10-year-old kid after being starved to death by the British Empire off their land. I mean, it goes on, and it's like these witnesses, these spirits, our ancestors and the ones yet born, they're pushing us in the struggle because, you know, I had a dream once where my grandfather, Daniel O'Neill, actually came to me. It was soon after this work started. And he said, this is your story too, Kevin. It isn't just about the people here. It's about our people too and what they did to us. So, you know, this is universal, it's historic, and we are on the cutting edge of something very important about reclaiming our world from these murderers. It's that simple. So thank you for that. I appreciate the indulgence.
It's a very powerful, powerful song. I think I'm going to be using that on my radio show too. It's very good stuff. And you're right, we are on the type of cutting edge, kind of like the tip of the spear in bringing this information about. And for our point of view, it can be very, very difficult sometimes, at least for me. And it's sometimes you see some of these stories, you hear witnesses, you read documents, and you think, are the people that are in charge, the people making these decisions, they really lack that much empathy? Are they really that psychotic? And I mean, that in and of itself is something that a lot of people can't really wrap their heads around, these types of crimes, because they look at it as if, you know, they would never hurt a child. They have no ulterior motives to harm a child or to steal somebody's land. But, you know, if at the end of the day, when you look at it, there is an underlying agenda for why all of this is taking place. And it's not just manifest destiny. There is a building, a construction of a type of prison planet for everybody. And right. We have to be on the cutting edge of being able to expose that, so we can kind of create our own republic outside right. of those laws and crimes that have been committed against humanity as a whole. Because it's not just Canada. It's not just America. It's every citizen, every human on this planet.
Right. And so we're going to talk about that specifically now for a little bit. The republic is something that's universal. It comes out of common law and natural law, and it arises from a simple notion which the founding fathers of America were supposed to have, and that is that every man and woman born is a sovereign being. Now, that word has been criminalized by the system. If you say you're sovereign, you're called a domestic terrorist. Well, then so was John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, because that word sovereign means nobody has jurisdiction over you. You can have jurisdiction over one another once you covenant together in a lawful assembly. That's what a republic is, built on that. People covenant as equals to share power. But even when they elect somebody, they don't hand over their sovereignty, ever. That sovereignty is kept, and we can withdraw it at any point, and that's what we're doing, because we have to now. Our backs are to the wall.
Well, Kevin, I think, let me get your take on this. I think a lot of the reason why we see so much dehumanization of people and getting them to think that they're worthless and they have no purpose in life. Part of that dehumanization agenda, if you will, is to prevent people from coming together and being able to subjectively right. view reality. What do you think?
Very much. And, you know, I look around at people I try to speak to about this stuff, and they're so beaten down every day, not only by the usual 9-to-5 wage slave garbage that people feel they have to do to survive, but the fear level that's so ramped up so easily all the time. And that's why, you know, and I want to talk about the people's assemblies, because this is a step we've come up with, which allows people to start gathering in their own neighborhoods. And we're talking, it can be a few blocks wide, but you start gathering your neighbors together, and you let them know that when you're gathered in assembly and you covenant together, you are a lawful body. And you can form your own laws, and you can enforce those laws in your community. You can get the police on board. You can get them to take an oath of allegiance to your assembly in that. But that's how it starts. That's how you build from the bottom up. And in September and in the fall, we're going to start this in a number of different communities, both in Canada and the U.S. We also have interest from other countries in doing this. And these people's assemblies actually gather everyone together and create a basis of unity. You don't have to agree. Like, we're not talking about the usual on-board progressive crowd who listen to the show. We're talking about a much wider swath of people who can be united on a simple basis that the system doesn't work for them anymore, that it's defrauding them at every level. And one of the steps we're talking about in Canada about the People's Assemblies, the very first thing they're going to do is to vote to keep all the tax money in their community, not a penny more to the federal government.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Absolutely. And like you talked about 3 or 4 weeks ago, maybe a month ago on the program, you were talking about how British Columbia, or was it in Vancouver? You guys took that vacant land and planted a garden.
That was in the downtown east side, and people are doing that kind of stuff all the time. You just never hear about it. And what I noticed is when people began to take some action in their own name, there's no words to describe how that empowers people and gives them that hope, because just digging on the ground with other people, just growing your own food. And that's undoubtedly why in America they're talking about banning people's gardens, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Where I lived in Florida for a while, there's still a strict ordinance for people growing gardens where they'll say, police will come by and say, you have to remove that garden because it's an eyesore to the neighbors. And the neighbors never actually complain. Or in one case, this guy was beaten in his front yard for growing vegetables. They consider it in some cases an act of domestic terrorism because the food hasn't been regulated by the bought and paid for FDA or USDA.
Right.
That's a part of Agenda 21.
Okay, now let's just before we get into the Agenda 21 stuff, I want to just say for listeners who haven't heard before, if you go to kanatarepublic.ca, you'll see our basic documents, you know, kind of outlining the lawful basis of what we're doing. But also in the weeks ahead, there'll be stuff posted, including at itccs.org, about how and why the assemblies are operating. And the common law courts that are going to be created out of these people's assemblies. And if you want to get on board with that, like I say, over 1,000 people have already taken the pledge to the Republic, but it's a passive membership. People are standing back and waiting. It's up to every one of you who've taken that pledge to enact these assemblies that our backs are to the wall now, people. This has to happen because things are coming down quickly. I think more quickly than we even realize. And so I want to encourage people to act on what you hear today and every Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern time, right here. So
Kevin,
yeah, go ahead.
Did you want to go ahead and get into Agenda 21, or do you have something else that you would like to bring up?
No, I want to lead into Agenda 21, linking it to what we talked about already. The Agenda 21, which came out of the UN United Nations Sustainable Development Conferences in the 1970s, uses this sustainable development word as a cover for what's really crimes against humanity. And the first time I saw that word, it was being bandied about by Indian government-funded native chiefs in Vancouver.
Really?
And it was being used, and we got the minutes of the Assembly of First Nations meeting in 2003 at the Musqueam Indian Reservation in Vancouver, and it kept using this word, Agenda 21, Sustainable Development. They were using it in terms of this. They said, well, to provide better services for the people on reserve, we have to be more stringent in cutting people off. In fact, what's going on under that guise is the government gives the Indian reservation chiefs a list, a quota every year of people they have to cut out of housing and benefits and funding. And these people end up on the street and die. And this is deliberate eugenics at the hands of their own chiefs. And most of the homeless natives I work with all the time in Vancouver and other places, they're victims of this Agenda 21. And it was brought in by the native chiefs with the federal government early in this century. And so that kind of leads into what we're talking about. It's depopulation and destruction of not only indigenous nations, but a lot of people.
That's right. The United Nations, there's two parts to Agenda 21. Agenda 21 means agenda of the 21st century, and that agenda is sustainable development is what they call it. Or they also have the Biodiversity Treaty, which was signed at the 1992 Earth Summit, which was headed by a man named Maurice Strong, who was the director of the Chicago Climate Exchange. It's funny, actually, that the Chicago Climate Exchange, the largest shareholder in that group is Goldman Sachs, who now has their men all over Europe in different positions of power. Right. And funding for the climate exchange in Chicago actually came from a foundation called JOICE, where President Barack Obama was once the head director. So it all kind of comes around full circle and ties together.
I just want to add a PS to that, Ryan, that Barack Obama's first paid job was with a community service group in Chicago funded by, guess who? The Catholic Archdiocese. And we know, we'll talk a bit about Bergoglio's role in Agenda 21 too, but go on, I'm sorry, I just thought I should throw that in.
No, absolutely, anytime we can put another note in there. I actually didn't know that, so that's good info. So sustainable development and biodiversity, the funny thing about it is it's all backwards, it's all a big trick. when they say biodiversity, it's really an elimination of diversification. And one of the ways that they're doing that is through food control. So you have the big biotech companies that have patented seeds, they've patented genes in certain animals. They're having, through the federal government and regulatory bodies, you know, say that growing a garden is, you know, is bad, it's harmful to the environment. You could poison your neighbor, so they're shutting those down. What it's really about is using regulatory agencies like the EPA, for example, they've regulated dust from small farms, and they've used that in order to get small farmers to have to pay these large fines for which they can't pay, and then the big companies come in and purchase up their land. And the goal of Agenda 21 is to eventually resettle a large portion of the population in what they call mega cities inside of these mega regions. And there's a group called America 2050, which was funded by the Rockefeller Foundation, and they actually produced a map. They're a think tank. They produced a map of the United States, and Canada and Mexico would be the same because under the American Union, which was signed in the 1990s under George Bush the Father, the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, and they have these different mega regions. And then within the mega regions, they've proposed setting up these large cities, kind of like they have in Japan, where everything is regulated, everything is under 24-hour surveillance. There really is not much in terms of travel. And when you do travel, you get molested by TSA agents. Everything is very restricted. Everything is under some type of control. And you eventually, as this breaks down, we've seen the control of media ownership decrease from 50 corporations to 5 corporations. And it was six just a couple of years ago. So what it basically is, to get all of this out of my mouth, is a consolidation of power in the hands of the very few, where eventually there will be one corporation that owns all food, all media, all entertainment, and that is the corporation that a majority of the planet will be forced to work for in these scenarios. Now, this might be another generation or two away. In fact, much of it will be. But these are plans that have been established, and these are plans that are being unraveled today. It's all done under the guise of sustaining the environment. The funny thing is, while these people that run these programs are some of the biggest polluters on the planet.
Well, you know, and that leads into the whole Vatican role in this, too. They're up to their eyebrows in this stuff. Guess what? You know, when Bergoglio, the big fan of the Time magazine, is their biggest fan, his biggest fan now. When Bergoglio arrives in America on September 21st, the first place he's going is to Philadelphia to speak at a conference on the family. Which is often these things are covers for child trafficking networks, and we know in this case that's the case. But then he's going to the United Nations to speak to the Sustainable Development Conference, okay? And, you know, they're big shareholders in Monsanto. The Vatican Bank is major interest in all of this stuff.
Yeah, you know, actually, the land for the United Nations was donated by the Rockefeller family. It used to, I thought it was very symbolic, it used to be a slaughterhouse when they owned it. Very appropriate. As a matter of fact, if you look at, you mentioned Monsanto, I was researching this Planned Parenthood scandal, and if you look into the American Society of Pediatrics for children to help kids get vaccines and whatnot, and to help them with nutrition, the biggest donations to the American Pediatrics Association is Monsanto, Merck, and GlaxoSmithKline, the vaccine manufacturers,
big pharma.
Biotech.
And the Vatican Bank is a heavy investor in all of those. So when people go on about all these beautiful reforms Bergoglio is making, let me just point out something to people. If you think Pope Francis is a reformer, ask if he's any of these so-called reforms he's talking about are being implemented. They're not, because he is a little hand puppet to get people to think that it's going to happen, when in fact, every time he makes a policy statement, the College of Cardinals usually disavows it, because they know that they're not actually going to act on it. So it's all smoke and mirrors.
It's like public relations, basically.
Exactly, and people fall for it because that's what Jesuits are trained in, dissimulation. They've been doing it for 400 years. But getting back to the whole Agenda 21 thing is that we are seeing this happening as we speak. And tell me what you think are the main aims of Agenda 21. Is it simply control or more?
Well, I think the main aims are to get a very, very tight form of control through the regulation of food, through the elimination of diversity, although they call it biodiversity, but the elimination of plant and animal species, which is already happening. So basically taking land under all of these different claims of sustainability and biodiversity, confiscating food and making sure that only a small, portion of the population is able to be rationed food supplies. That's already starting to happen. Trying to control every aspect of the environment. And again, the main underlying goal is to take that land in order to kind of resettle the population. But underlying all of that, Kevin, is an agenda of eugenics to eradicate large portions of the population. And it's not done necessarily with Gestapo agents busting down your door or stormtroopers. No. It's done by tricking you into performing genocide on yourself through the different foods and the vaccinations and the medications and the different treatments that are considered treatments like cancer treatments, which actually kill you faster than doing anything else to help you. So that's really what it's all about. And also the last thing I remembered researching the last couple of weeks was the first head of UNESCO was Julian Huxley, who was the brother of Aldous Huxley, who wrote a Brave New World. And Aldous Huxley was actually the teacher of Eric Blair or George Orwell, who wrote 1984. And they were both members of the Fabian Society, which was named after a general named Fabius, who used to use these hit and run tactics, a type of guerrilla warfare to slowly wear down his enemy. And that kind of mentality is the same mentality we've seen. That UNESCO group, they actually called for the years of 2005 up into this year, 2015, to be the years of sustainable education for the youth, teaching kids how great sustainability is. And as a matter of fact, I don't know if you heard this, there was a bill in Colorado, well, not necessarily a bill, but they were trying to get it passed in the Congress, where they would change the entire advanced placement course for history classes for colleges. And people said, you know, people were protesting, saying we don't want to do this because they were trying to get rid of the American Revolution and the Civil War, what they call negative history.
Negative.
Well, what they did now, Kevin, they actually just announced 2 days ago that they replaced that policy with a course called American Exceptionalism, where they're going to teach kids how great America is, and they're going to teach kids all this sustainable development crap.
Right. Okay. Well, Ryan, you know, we've got 5 minutes left here, and I want to end on the note that's going to say, yeah, we know a lot of the problems, and it's excellent you're bringing out all this stuff out, and I want to use it as a springboard to people to say, because of the centralizing Agenda 21, you're not going to have a future unless you follow the root of what we're saying, which is the people's assemblies taking back your power locally and not looking to authorities. And what blows me away is people will hear this stuff, Ryan, and then they'll say, yeah, but I'm going to write to my member of parliament about this, or you know, maybe we should, maybe there's this honest judge I found in the system, and let's look to Rome. I mean, it looks like they're changing things now. People have got to get out of the slave thinking and take back your own power, and it's not going to come from a pope or a reformer or anybody but yourself, and unless we learn that case, we don't have a future.
That's right. You have to take responsibility for yourself, and you have to stop allowing yourself to be tricked by giving complete independence to the government in order to attain some illusion of dependence. And they have really tricked people into thinking that by giving up independence, they somehow get independence. But what they get is dependence on the system. By giving up liberty, you get freedom. It's the very opposite of that. Right. You have to take those actions into your own hands, and you can't allow for somebody else to do it.
Well, one of the problems, of course, is that people simply don't know any better. You've been raised as a slave. You can't think outside the box. And we know it isn't just a matter of education. It's not a matter of providing information with people. We have to get right into how people are being indoctrinated and provide a working alternative for people, because most people will not act unless they see something to join. They've got to see something that works, and then they'll join up. But those minority who are willing to act, it's time to rally together and stop being divided against one another. So we're going to get into that in next week especially. We're going to talk more about that and have more people on to discuss that. But let me just ask, Ryan, we've got a couple of minutes left. Why don't you announce your website and all that, the show?
Yeah, absolutely. The radio show is The Secret Teachings. I've been doing it for about 6 years now, coming up on 7. And the website is www.thesecretteachings.info. We cover a lot of the same topics we cover here on Radio Free Kanata, but we go into a lot of different areas. I've written 3 major books on these subjects as well as others. One of them that our listeners here on Radio Free Kanata might find the most appropriate is entitled False Prophets and the Lovers of Children. It's kind of a history of the Vatican and these child trafficking networks. And my show tonight will be airing at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And it is the second week of my coverage of the history of not just Planned Parenthood it as a eugenics movement coming out of the Rockefeller Foundation, but of sustainability and what the sustainable development movement is really all about. 3 full hours tonight, 3 full hours last week. You can download that episode for free on the website. It's thesecretteachings.info, and that's where the link to listen tonight will also be.
Thank you, Ren. We'll all be tuning in. And for the listeners in the last minute, I just want to say, don't forget, KanataRepublic.ca. We're here every Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern at the BBS Radio Network. And in the coming week, think of ways that you can become personally involved and take responsibility. Contact us, republicofkanata@gmail.com, and stay tuned for more updates and calls to action. Don't forget, the Crown of England is lawfully disestablished. It has no authority over you in Canada. You do not have to act under its jurisdiction. We provided a new common law model for you. You can learn more about that. And leading into that whole theme is our ending song, which is Farewell to the Crown. It doesn't have authority, folks, anymore. Folks, wave goodbye to it. And thank you. We'll be back next week. This is Kevin Annett.